Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Go.
Oh, start again.
No, let's carry on.
Go on then.
The shambolic beginning to what will probably be a shambolic podcast. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. And yeah, I'm back off my holly bobs.
Thank God.
Well done last week.
Thank God. No. If anyone thinks that what you do is easy, they're wrong. It is one of the hardest things that I've ever done.
It's just talking into a stick, you know what I mean?
That's just talking into a stick. Humble brag, Tim. Humble brag. we did the opener about three times last week, and that's the best one that we had.
Well, the one we just did wasn't particularly good, so there you go. Well, anyway, I'm Tim, and that's JB. And Phil, notable by his absence.
Yeah. Now, you're probably going to ask what's happened to Phil. We're not going to tell you because, well, I don't know if he'd get into trouble, but let's just put it this way. He's had an encounter with Her Majesty's Constabulary, so he can't make it today, and we're not going to say anything more than that.
I did wonder, because there was a rumour flying around that actually, basically, his body had become such a wreck that as a last roll of the dice, he's been put forward in a exploratory new programme to create a human-robot hybrid.
Yeah, well,
replacing his shoulders and legs with robotic limbs.
Yeah, well, I'd like that to be the case, but he is in a spot of bother, so we'll just leave him alone for now, and maybe in a few podcast time we'll get him back, but not this week.
Oh, well. But no, I've not had the pleasure of meeting CJ, but from what I heard on the podcast, he seems like a good egg.
I will give you a little bit of a clue about CJ. When Phil comes up with all his facts and figures, a lot of them come from CJ, who writes on a betting website.
Wow.
There you go.
Good. Well, I do feel inadequate that with you, JB, and with him, CJ, I don't have a two-initial name.
I know. It's not great, is it?
I need to sort this out. But anyway, listen, there's still plenty to talk about. A lot of it reflective because, let's face it, the big action of the Northern Hemisphere rugby season is now over.
Yeah, great weekend.
Yeah, amazing weekend. We've got plenty of international stuff to look forward to. And there is the small matter of, depending on when you're listening to this, the playoff final to see who will be joining the 11 Premiership sides next season. Will it be? Well, I mean, it looks like being London Welsh.
The billion-dollar mistake.
I know. God, that could be it. That could really blow up in their face, couldn't it? Dwayne Peel, Perenisi go into
whose face is it actually blowing up in, though? Because he's still a billionaire, and Peel and Ryan Jones are playing against Bedford next year, or whoever it is that they play against.
Mosley. Yeah. Yeah, it's a funny one. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But, like I say, almost all over in the Northern Hemisphere, the big finals are done and dusted. And you watched all of them, JB. I will confess that I watched all of them, but kind of slipping in and out of consciousness as I was sort of suffering with jet lag.
No, I see.
Trying to stay awake. But I did see a lot of it. Start with the top 14 final then.
Yeah, the top 14
final. Too long cast.
Was very top 14-ish, if that makes any sense, which is very, very powerful, but not that exciting. Now, here's something really interesting about the top 14. They mentioned the number 8, I think his name, and I know I'm going to get this wrong, I think his name is Klaassens,
yeah.
the number 8. And his old man used to play for South Africa. In fact, I think he used to captain South Africa. And he is moving from Cast, and he's going over to Racing Metro. Now, the reason that's interesting is because from what I gleaned from the commentary, all of the Racing Metro coaching staff were last year's Cast coaching staff, which makes it even more amazing that Cast got to a second semi-final when they had a whole new backroom team.
Final even. Because last year...
Sorry, did I... What
yeah,
I said?
You said semi-final.
Sorry, final.
Yeah, they got to a second final. Last year they beat Toulon. This year they didn't quite have the firepower to do that again.
No one was beating Johnny.
No.
It was written in the stars.
There's something just about his life that's just poetic, isn't it?
It is. And yeah, I think poetic nails it. To go from the highs which he was at for the World Cup and then 4 years not playing and then to build it back up again and have the double of the Heineken Cup and now the top 14 is really quite spectacular. And even more spectacular was to have that French crowd singing God Save the Queen.
I didn't see that.
Oh, as a,
wow.
As a tribute to him at the end, they sung the French crowds sung God Save the Queen.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. And I mean, right, he is, and I heard the debate last week where CJ was saying he's overrated.
Well, CJ described him as an Emil Heskey of rugby. He did the best with the talent he had.
he is a legend. He will go down in folklore. He will be regarded as one of the great players ever.
I'm already writing a folk song about him, actually. I'll be releasing that soon.
But that's looking at the span of his whole career. In terms of his career at Toulon, two back-to-back Heineken Cup titles, I mean, that's a massive achievement. But he was the first to admit he did that with a star-studded team. A domestic title as well. But has he had such a big impact on Toulon? Has he been such a legend purely just at Toulon that they should indeed, as they are, retire the number 10 shirt? No one will ever wear the number 10 shirt at Toulon again.
Sorry?
They're retiring the number
10
shirt.
No, they're not. That's not true. Are you serious?
Unless it's a wind-up.
Are you reading that from The Onion or The Daily Mash?
As far as I understand it, Toulon are retiring the number 10 jersey.
I don't think you're allowed to. I don't think you're allowed to change numbers. And I'll tell you why I don't think you're allowed to change numbers. Because Leicester used to be known as the ABC club. And they tried to change numbers 1, 2, 3. In fact, they tried to change all the numbers to letters again. As, you know, a doff the cap to the good old days. And they weren't allowed to do it. So I'd be amazed if you're allowed to take the number 10 out.
Well, I know that every single jersey that was worn in the final game at the weekend, the sort of 14 final, had on the inside of the collar, Mercy Johnny, stitched inside it. Every single player had that. And they've said they want to. You're right.
Oh,
they haven't said they will, but they want the Mourad Boujalal, the chairman of Toulon, the owner, says he wants to retire the number 10 jersey if he can.
That'd be hilarious. And also, how would the future 10 take that? You know, the next world-class 10, probably going to be Dan Carter, who shows up there next, and he's not allowed to wear the 10 jersey. That's not going to go down well. He's got to wear 16. Or maybe he'd wear the letter J.
Let's assume that they can do it. Like, from what you're saying, they probably won't be allowed to. But let's just say they can. Would that be a fitting tribute, or would that be, let's take the romance out of this for a second, a little bit over the top?
Let's talk like a reactionary politician for a second and say it's the thin end of the wedge. Because as soon as they do that for Johnny, who's to say they won't do it for, I don't know, who is there in English rugby with similar stature? Well, it's only Johnny, really.
Well, it's only him.
Yeah, or like retiring Sam Warburton 7 if he wins a World Cup or something. No,
yeah.
They can't do that. But they, I tell you where they do it all. What's that?
What's that? I don't know. Is that Phil saying he's used up his one phone call?
He has used up his one phone call. Apparently he's smuggled in a phone somehow. Interesting.
Excellent. We'll keep you up to date. If JB's phone goes off, we'll let you know what's happening with Phil. I think he's been a legend, right? In over his career, he's won a World Cup, he's won two Heineken Cup titles, he's won the English division, he's won the French top division. He's been loved and had a massive impact and been a true professional wherever he's gone. But he has been at Toulon for, what, 4 years?
Yes.
And retiring a jersey, when you look at other sports that have done that, Michael Jordan...
Did they retire his?
They retired the number 23 jersey.
Have they not brought it back, though?
I think the NBA retired the number 23 jersey, so no player in the NBA can wear the number 23.
No, that can't be right.
I believe that's right.
Wow.
And Wayne Gretzky in ice hockey had his jersey retired. There must be players
in the
LA
Kings? Or the Edmonton Oilers?
I'm not sure which one, Jake.
Well, come on, Tim. Call yourself a sports fan.
But there must be one in American football where they've done
that. Oh, there's loads in American football. They'll probably retire Brett Favre's jersey, number...
Four.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm sure they've retired someone else's recently as well. But in American football, it's relatively common. But when you've got 99 numbers, yeah. It doesn't really matter, does it? And you've only got 52 players. I think the big difference is they actually have genuine squad numbers, whereas in rugby, you're mandated to have 1 to 15 playing, well, at the start of every
15,
game.
Yeah. So we'll see if they do that. But
I hope they do. That'd be quite cool, actually.
Whatever you say, the guy is... just something special. And yes, he made the most of the talent he had. Yes, he was also phenomenally talented.
Cristiano Ronaldo has made the most of the talent he has. Yeah. It doesn't make him any less talented player.
Absolutely. And I completely agree with you. And as for the game itself, it was, like you say, pragmatic, powerful. Toulon winning in much the same way as they beat Saracens. Not necessarily pretty, but just power.
No, it isn't. The one thing you'd say about Toulon is it isn't the most they could do with the talent they have in terms of aesthetically pleasing rugby.
Yeah.
But, okay, fine.
Interesting point was made on Twitter, and you can always get in touch at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, but an interesting tweet sums up French rugby. There were as many Scots in the Cass starting 15 as there were French players in the Toulon 15.
Okay, we're talking Richie Gray and we're talking Tom or Max Evans, one of the Evans boys.
Yeah.
Well done, Scotland. I saw something interesting today. It was an article about South Africa and they've called for this guy called Richie Gray to help them train. So immediately I thought, oh, Richie Gray, maybe they're doing some line-out practices, or maybe they're using that big body for something useful for a change. No, Richie Gray is a coach and he's invented something called, I think it's called the Contact Master. Have you seen this thing?
No.
He's invented all these little machines for the breakdown and they're absolutely fascinating. So like one is like a sled with loads of padding on and you've got to ruck against it whilst other men stand on it and it's at an angle. And they were trying to explain the other one, which is a sand-filled steel pipe, and when you hit it, it causes a chain reaction to then make resistance or something. It sounds crazy, but he's got five or six machines, and they're all made by Rhino. Big plug for Rhino and Richie Gray there.
Nice.
But he's been recruited by South Africa.
Send Jay a contact machine or whatever it is.
Exactly.
For your back garden, that'll wreck your lawn. Well, Mourad Boujalal isn't resting on his laurels after back-to-back Heineken Cup championships because he is saying, well, they've already made their signings for next season, including Gore Godza, Vosloo, James O'Connor and others.
Lee Halfpenny,
of course. But he's saying that he doesn't want to rest on his laurels and he wants to sign what he describes as the Fantastic Four. He says he wants the four best players in the world to join Toulon. Now, the speculation is that what he means by this is for the 2015-16 season, so post the World Cup, which would therefore open up pretty much anyone in the world, because a lot of players...
Is that what he's saying? Is that what he wants them for?
That's what he's thought to mean by that, because I think the signings for next season have all been pretty much finalised.
Mm.
So the Fantastic Four, he's basically saying he wants the four best players in the world. Who are the four best players in the world? Players does he mean? Which are the Fantastic Four that he wants and he will bear any expense to get to Toulon?
Well, within the salary cap, obviously, Tim.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, within legal means.
Within purely legal means.
I've thought about this long and hard. And it might be an indictment of how competitive the modern game is that I can't really think of anyone that really stands out.
Well, I mean, assuming it's post-World Cup, Richie McCaw.
Would you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dan Carter.
Yes.
Although he hasn't played.
Boujalal describes him as unplayable.
Well, now, the four players that he wants.
Yeah.
Well, I've got a few other suggestions.
Go on.
Kieran Reid.
Absolutely, that's one.
Definitely. And sticking with the back row / second row, Eben Etzebeth, South African.
I thought that one.
Awesome player. Bismarck Duplessis.
Yep.
As a hooker, what a player. And then I was going through other players. I was thinking, well,
I'll give you one.
Sonny Bill Williams.
Oh, that's a really good shout. And he's also got some history there as well, hasn't he? Sonny Bill's a good shout. Yeah, that's a really good shout.
I mean, obviously, we're looking for the fourth player to go with your holy trinity of Andy Goode, Jack Berger and Charlie Hodgson. That goes without saying, Jay.
I'll give you one, which I don't think you've considered. Maybe you have. How about Danny Kerr?
Interesting.
Who is better than Danny Kerr at the moment?
In their position...
In the world of rugby at scrum half.
Will Genya, maybe.
Will Genya's fallen off a cliff.
Well, that's an interesting shout. And actually, that is an area of need for Toulon.
So me and Phil were watching the game before he got into his unfortunate legal troubles. And we, as Phil does, he got a little spreadsheet out to work out where they're weak. So we think it's a number eight. So that's Kieran Reid.
Kieran Reid.
They're losing Van Niekerk, yeah. And they're losing some Rousseau.
Yeah.
So they have got someone else in.
And back row players, Armitage is one getting Gore Godza.
Gore Godza's coming in.
Yeah.
A loose head prop. So we're thinking one of the South African boys.
The Beast.
Well, yeah, that's exactly who we thought. Yeah. I tell you what, if you're talking
Healy.
The actual best players in the world at where they are, you can't look much further than George North. He's not going anywhere because of his contract. Mm. But he is definitely the best winger in the world. Mm. Well, I'd say definitely. There's three of them, isn't it? I'd say him, Surveyor, and Folau.
Mike Brown.
Mike Brown is definitely up there.
Jamie Heaslip.
Not so much. Have you seen his new haircut, by the way? What do you think of this, Tim? You're down with the kids, with your radio job and all the rest of it. What do you think of the high and tight haircut?
Yeah, I'm really, really not a fan of this.
The shaved
all up the sides and then like the side parting, Danny Kerr style. I'm not a fan.
Do you consider it a scourge and a scar on the face of modern society?
It's just what people do, isn't it? There's a trend and people go with it. But it's the Kim Jong-un haircut. That's what it is.
Well,
they're just copying North Korea's great leader.
Dictator chic.
Yeah, exactly. But Danny Kerr was one of the first rugby players to get it.
Wow, what a groundbreaker.
But it is just a spate. It is a spate. And I think it's one of those haircuts, and this happens a lot.
Prison haircut.
At the time, you think it looks good and it's trendy. You look back 10 years afterwards and think, what on earth was I doing?
I know. I went back to play for Colwyn Bay maybe 6 weeks ago now. And the opposition team, I didn't know, were full of young kids. And they all had these floppy, shaved at the sides and floppy hair. Mm. God, I felt old.
Ma Nonu would be one more I'd throw into the mix.
I don't know. He played very well this weekend. Mm. But is he the best? No, yeah, probably. Is he unplayable? I'm not so sure he's unplayable. I'm not sure he's a better 12 than, for instance, Gitto is.
Oh, he had a good game.
He did.
Once again. So that's the top 14 anyway. We'll wait and see which Fantastic Four Murad Boujalal is talking about. He tends to get whoever he wants. And on to the Premiership final then. And two teams that were so well matched that very nearly... Well, it did go all the way. It went into injury time. The final player of the match after extra time won it for Northampton Saints. And ugh. I was really pleased for Northampton Saints.
I'm delighted for them. I mean, it's a really tough one for me. I would have cheered either way because obviously I want Jack Berger to win anything.
Yeah, of course.
But on the other hand, Northampton just seemed to deserve it. Their whole history, they've never won a Premiership or the top league, in whichever coronation it was in. In addition, they're run in the right way. They don't have a wealthy benefactor. They're profitable. They've been profitable for the last 15 seasons.
I know. They're one of only, I think it's two, I think, two or three, possibly three.
Leicester, Gloucester, Northampton is what I seem to think it is.
I think Exeter Chiefs as well. Run at a profit. So there's only a few. There's only a handful of teams that actually operate at a profit. And like you say, Northampton Saints have done that year on year on year on year. They don't spend beyond their means.
Nope.
They don't have any particularly creative ways of getting around the salary cap that other teams appear to, from the outside at least. And they've got a great academy, and a lot of the players that were instrumental in them winning and a lot of the players that came off the bench and made an impact were players that have come through at Northampton. And one of those who's going now on the tour with England to New Zealand, Alex Waller, with that final try. Now, Alex Waller on this, the loosehead prop, he's got one of those faces, like an eight-year-old kid. You know, kids at a wedding, and you've got your wedding coming up in a few weeks, they have like a can of Coke and they have a bit of cake and they go a bit mental and they go sprinting round for an hour, and then their faces become red and flushed and they sweat. That's what Alex Waller looks like when he plays rugby.
I tell you what Alex Waller looks like. Alex Waller looks like a hero. Did you see Corbett Sierra attempt a scrimmage on the weekend?
Mm-hmm.
My word, it was not pleasant.
I thought you had a decent game, Corbett Sierra.
Oh, behave. Behave, you don't mean that.
I do, I thought him, Tom Wood, and Courtney Laws were excellent.
He was terrible. I mean, in open play, it's easy to say, oh, he's all right, but he dropped one ball, anyone can drop a ball. In the scrimmage, he got battered. Matt Stevens took him to the woodshed, gave him 2x4, sent him home. It was horrendous to watch. He was going sideways. He was coming in pretty much 90 degrees on Matt Stevens. Not because that was his choice to come in 90 degrees. It's because Matt Stevens was just beating him up.
And this is the same guy that came in and made that impact for the British Lions and was lauded after that.
Well, I don't think it's his fault. I think it's the fault of the coaching staff for throwing him in so soon after... I think he's only played four games this season. I think last season he played 15 games or something. No, it wasn't even that many. It's less. Because if you look at how many... It's amazing he went on the Lions tour with so few games under his belt last season. And I think they made a real mistake putting him on. They should have started with Waller. Because when Waller came on, he was going sideways too, but nothing like the way that Alex Corbett-Sierra was. Nothing like it. So I thought Northampton got... got away with the scrum quite often.
I was glad they won in the end because it was 3-1. And you made the point on last week's podcast when I wasn't here that Sarries are a well-oiled machine, but possibly lacked a little bit of a spark. And in the biggest games, they've been exposed for that. They have creative players, but they're not a creative unit. They're kind of rely on power and efficiency and just grinding teams down and strangling them rather than winning games.
If we were to talk in American football parlances, you would call Saracens a scheme team. So they rely on their scheme, whereas Northampton, yeah, they certainly have a scheme and a game plan, but they've got some great individuals too. And I think it's the difference between building a team to win a league, which is where you need depth and big squad, and building a team to win a playoff, where that Northampton team, all their money is in that starting 15, and you know it works well. When they have all their players, Northampton have been remarkably lucky this year to have so many players playing so frequently, because often injuries will just devastate a squad. And I don't think they're particularly...
Well, they've missed Corbisiero all season, for one. Yeah, that's a really crucial position.
It is, but...
Unfortunately, they've got Alex Waller coming through. Otherwise, they could have been in a pickle. Courtney Laws and Tom Wood were just awesome.
Tom Wood has stepped up his game. I don't know if he's stepped up his game or we've just noticed him more because we watched him very, very closely for the last 2 weeks. But yeah, Tom Wood is awesome. I tell you, the other guy who I've got huge amounts of respect for now is... it's Dickinson. Is it Alex Dickinson?
Sam Dickinson.
Sam Dickinson,
right.
Thank you.
Best signing of the season.
Wow.
Comfortably. By a country mile. He came from Rotherham in the Championship last year.
He hits like a hammer. He runs like a train. He's just absolutely awesome.
If you can name a better signing, and I'm even including George North or any big name signing, if you can name a better signing, a shrewder, more effective bit of business than Sam Dickinson going from Rotherham in the Championship to Northampton Saints and being a key member of the side that has won 2 trophies.
But that's what they do. They buy the best players and the worst teams.
Luther Borrell.
Yeah.
Not wanted, not loved by Sale, not played, and they've helped him turn into a comfortable international player.
I didn't realise how much I liked Luther Borrell until on Saturday, Phil pointed out that I kept on going crazy when he got the ball. Mm-hmm. Luth, go Luth, big Luth, big Luth. Then I started singing "The Luth is on fire." Yeah, again, a great signing.
Right, unfortunately though, we're going to return to that old topic of TMOs, referees, which has, I mean, is blighted too strong a word this season? All I will say is I'm glad for the use of technology, and I think that anything which gets the right decision, I'm good with. But I wasn't happy with a couple of incidents. Let's talk about the final decision first. Right decision? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Alex Waller scored that try. Now, JP Doyle went to the TMO, and that's absolutely fine. Earlier in the season, the same two guys combined, I think it was London Irish against Leicester, Graham Hughes was about to say, give London Irish a try, that's fair enough, that was a backwards pass. JP Doyle just went, I've seen it, don't worry, I've decided that's forward, scrum Leicester, no try. JP Doyle was about to do the same thing again. We could have had a massive controversy on our hands,
yeah,
because if you watch that carefully, the final moments, JP Doyle, after watching the replay on the big screen and asking Graham Hughes to give a decision, he starts saying, well, that's inconclusive as far as I'm concerned. I'm not awarding it. And Graham Hughes, on this occasion, obviously went, realised what the stakes were. And before JP Doyle could say, I don't want to award it, he went, it was a try. Give the try. And he said it with enough conviction that JP Doyle was convinced. But JP Doyle was about to disallow that try. I'm telling you, that's what he was about to do.
I agree with you. But anyone who's listened to this podcast before knows I'm not a huge fan of officials. And I don't like the whole structured rule thing as if they work for the health and safety executive. However, I think in this case, that's kind of how the TMO should really work, which is there shouldn't be any structure. If you want to ask him something, fine. If you see something, fine. As long as the decision is correct, I'm not really bothered how it comes.
Well, exactly. But this is what I would say. In previous weeks and in previous matches and earlier in this season, the TMOs have stayed tight-lipped. And on those occasions where the referee hasn't gone for their decision and you suspect that they would have given a different decision, they've just kept stum. And I applaud Graham Hughes for actually being really assertive and going, not listening to JP Doyle and going, oi, no, it's a try.
Mm.
Which they haven't done, and I say fine. If that's the remit, and that's the TMO can be forceful and can throw their case if they disagree with the ref. It doesn't have to go with the referee. And had the Graham Hughes just sat back and let JP Doyle make the decision, we would have been sat here saying, how could JP Doyle ruin a final by not giving that try?
Exactly. Well, I don't know what you think about this, but in my opinion, there doesn't seem to be any remit of how you use TMOs. It's basically, I will do whatever I want with the TMO, and they can assist in whichever way possible. Thank God Graham Hughes did give that try.
What about the Owen Farrell try or disallowed try?
It wasn't a try.
Well, hold on. Owen Farrell scored a try. He got injured.
I love that bit. I love that so much.
Right. So Owen Farrell got injured. JP Doyle was happy with the try. It was only disallowed because Owen Farrell was injured, and to fill time, the TV cameras were showing the try again.
Yeah.
JP Doyle saw the replay and went, actually, I think I better have a look at that. And then when he went to the TMO, it was the TMO who said, JP, I think you should have a look at that pass. It wasn't JP Doyle going to the TMO going, could you please check that pass? It was the other way round.
It is annoying if you're Saracens, but it's the right decision.
The right decision was made, but the way that they got there was...
I tell you what would annoy me.
Annoyed me.
If there was an off-the-ball incident and someone threw an elbow or something, and then he goes, JP, you need to revisit that elbow or something. I mean, I don't have any time for that nonsense.
Well, TJ's can do, assistant referee, sorry, can do that.
Amazing, isn't it? Wayne Bond stayed muzzled. I thought it'd be a frisbeeing yellow cards from the side.
He was trying to let the boys play, JB.
No, he was not. He hates letting the boys play. He hates rugby.
Well, anyway, well done to Northampton Saints.
Yeah. What's the deal with Graham Hughes? Have you ever seen him in the light? Is he photophobic?
I think I don't know what the opposite of agoraphobic. He only likes being in a small, confined space.
Do you reckon that after the game, they go in there, they put like a protective blindfold on him so he's not exposed to the sun, and put him back in his cave?
Yeah, exactly. He's like...
With a rule book.
They calm animals down by putting... putting blinkers or putting like a black thing on their head. It calms them as they transport them around. That's what Graham Hughes does. Goes from Aviva Premiership ground. In fact, they could probably just like get a crane and just lift the little boxes in onto the back of a lorry.
Carting them
around. Take it with the broadcast trucks to the next live game. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what they do.
It's fact.
Right, and we've saved the biggest final till last, the Pro 12 Rabo Direct. Yeah!
What a final! Wow!
Now, I will just say at this point, and it's particularly you and your disparaging comments about the Pro 12, we've got some stick. You've got some stick, particularly.
I have got
JB,
some stick. And
for not respecting the Rabo Pro 12.
Yeah. Now, maybe I deserve a little bit of banter for this, but Stephen O'Neill tweeted us and said something along the lines of...
Well, one of a few people, because there's been a lot of people that over the past months have been saying, come on, guys, why aren't you talking about the Pro 12?
Yeah.
Mainly because we...
Well, we don't watch it.
We don't really watch it.
Here's the thing. If you like the Pro 12... there's a strong correlation with enjoying Pro 12 rugby and being Irish. And there's a good reason for this, which is because the Irish teams are really, really good and they're well run. And, you know, they're a credit to what they do. They really are very good. The problem with the Pro 12, though, is the rest of it's rubbish. Like, it really is awful. So, I'm Welsh and I take no enjoyment from watching the Welsh teams whatsoever because they're rubbish. And they're continually losing their players. Not only are they losing their players, there's turmoil in Wales now. The Welsh squad is centrally contracted. They've got a huge squad of one player. it's an absolute farce. So I thought I'd pull up some numbers of why you would not watch the Pro 12. And I think,
come on then.
It's not just me who doesn't want to watch the Pro 12. It's the fans as well. Now, the average Pro 12 attendance, right, is 12,754 a game. That's quite good, yeah?
Yeah, that's not bad. That's as good as the Premiership, surely.
Yeah, easily. Except when you realise that that is made up of 19,000 a week going to Leinster and 14,000 a week going to Munster, a further 10,000 a week going to Ulster. When you look down after that, it's pretty sad until it goes all the way down to Zebra, where it's about 1,000 people a game. So if you take out the Irish teams, who are absolutely fantastic, what you're left with is pretty ropey. It'd be like having the top four in the Premiership in the Championship week in, week out. And it's reflected as well in the fact that of the winners of the Pro 12, I think eight of them, or maybe nine of them, have been Irish, five of them have been Welsh, And the other two nations, which are Scotland and Italy, have won 0-0 between them. The Italians have had, I think it's one team disbanded, which is Aroni. I think the Italian teams are also leaving shortly as well.
Scotland consolidated, didn't they, into just two regions from three or four?
Yeah, because the borders went. Yeah. So the borders were set up and then they went bankrupt. The Celtic Warriors went bankrupt. This is a league originally so ill-conceived that when it was first set up, there was an odd number of teams, which meant that every week there's one team which couldn't play. And also it didn't have a sponsor until the 11th hour. If you want to know why we don't particularly like the Pro 12, that is why. Now, but there is light at the end of the tunnel, Tim.
Is there, Jay? Go on.
There is, which is every year the Pro 12 has had increasing attendances. This year is the first year that it's got over a million spectators. And it's nice to see as well that the teams which are left seem to be consolidating now. So the Irish, the Italian teams are leaving, but the Scottish teams for sure are getting better. Glasgow played very, very well all season. They were overpowered by Leinster at the end. But if you think about what we've just said, that was to be expected. Basically, what the Pro 12 needs is for the Welsh to get their acts together and actually put out a decent product. And until that happens, unfortunately, we're going to carry on not really watching the Pro 12.
Mm. It's a case well put and well made, but it's with respect. Yeah. Undoubtedly, it's with respect. Now, there was one person kind of flopped out of rugby at the weekend. It wasn't the poetic ending. I suppose it was a poetic ending to his international career with that brilliant Paris-France win for Brian O'Driscoll, but nine minutes of a Pro 12 direct final, and he got injured and went off, albeit to a standing ovation.
And they were still more than powerful enough to beat Glasgow, and they beat them quite comfortably in the end.
In the end.
Yeah.
On the subject of Brian O'Driscoll, if Johnny Wilkinson is this iconic legend who won everything, how far below him, or is he side by side, or even above, where does Brian O'Driscoll sit in the pantheon of greats?
Well, the thing about Brian O'Driscoll is, he's never... I'm going to get slated for this. I don't think he's done what Johnny did in international rugby. He's also not... It's hard to say, isn't it?
Because Brian O'Driscoll did win a Lions Test Series.
Jonathan Davis won a Lions Test Series. Let's not forget that.
Okay.
I mean, who knows? If he hadn't been dropped on his head in New Zealand, you know, it might have been better. If he hadn't been injured in Australia, again, it might have been better.
Born a New Zealander, then it would certainly have been better.
I tell you what, if he hadn't been dropped on his head in New Zealand, we wouldn't have all these stupid rules about going past the horizontal. That's his fault. So I kind of blame him for that too. There again, he has won a lot of European Cups. He's been an outstanding player. I think if Johnny Wilkinson is the top of the hill, he's probably, I don't know, the next level below. I think the fact Johnny Wilkinson has won a final, and the way he won it, he was the key player in the best team the Northern Hemisphere has ever produced, and then he's gone to a final. You can't really ask for much more than that.
We're going to return to the only tournament that is still actually ongoing as at the time that we record this podcast right now. But from going from the Rabo Pro 12 Direct, it seems appropriate to go from there to initiate another member of Banter Squadron! Banter Squadron exists to recognise achievements and efforts in banter that make rugby the game we love and cherish so much. There is something special about rugby players. They have a level of banter and a kinship with the everyman that means...
The everyman that drives a Range Rover and wears tweed. They have a kinship.
And it has a barber jacket and one of those seats that folds out into a little spike.
That's
on the
right.
end.
That you and they're like the having ground. Picnics in car parks.
And chocolate Labradors.
Yes, kinship, I tell you.
There is something about rugby players that makes them special and makes them different. And it's important to us as part of the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast that we celebrate players who go above and beyond when it comes to rugby banter. The people that we've initiated so far have been the Honey Badger, Nick Cummins.
I didn't realise this tune was so delightful, like a minute in.
That's lovely, isn't it?
It is nice.
It's been Joe Marler as well. He's in Banter Squadron. And I want to put forward that Irish international, British Lion, Munsterman, Donica O'Callaghan should be initiated into Banter Squad. Here's why. Because when I first mentioned this to you earlier, JB, you were like, really? Donica O'Callaghan, really?
Well, Ronaldo's been a bit daft, I guess.
He's a bit of a prankster. He likes a bit of a laugh, but this is part of it, I think. So he once, with a box of cornflakes, enticed 12 ducks into an island team meeting.
That's excellent.
When playing in France for Munster, whilst playing in Europe in France, he adopted a lobster. So in the restaurant, it said in the menu, lobster, €30. €42 cooked. So he went, oh, what you mean I can just buy a lobster? So he bought a lobster and then took it with him as his pet.
Wow.
He played in a pair of red pants. There's that amazing footage, I think it's from about 1996, where Munster are playing in Europe, and his shorts rip, and he tries to carry on playing just in a pair of red pants.
I've not seen that.
It's a brilliant clip. I'll tweet it at Rugby Podcast. It's worthy of him being in Banter Squadron alone.
Wow.
And he plays on, and the referee has to stop and say, no, you've got to put some shorts on. And it's
Let
the boys play. He also, and I think this is brilliant, I'm going to play you a little clip of Donica O'Callaghan being asked. There's two things actually I want to talk about here. Here he is being asked, who's the best singer?
Best singer, to be fair, is Damien Varley, nicknamed Susan Boyle. Without being harsh to Susan Boyle, she's probably be not the best looking, but an incredible singer.
A bit like
our Damien. He looks like he's been kicked around the place, and then he opens his mouth, and it's the voice of an angel. Face of a chewed dog. A melted bucket.
A melted bucket?
Voice of an angel, face of a melted bucket.
Wait, he said a chewed something. Oh, scrap that analogy. Melted bucket.
Melted bucket. I just thought that was a beautiful, beautiful description. But more than that, and here's what I think. I mean, this isn't banter so much. I just think this is a lovely, lovely sentiment. What a guy this guy is. Here's how he answers this question.
Which isn't a bad thing.
Oh, hold on. He's asked the question, what has been the highlight of your year? So this is the season that's just gone. What was the highlight of your year?
Highlight of the year, I suppose, as an Irish person watching the Six Nations was great, and that's the bit that sticks out for me, the last game in France, going down to the wire, and just the lads having the having the balls to get across the line, and I watched that at home. I've never been as proud to be Irish, and just the lift it gave the whole place, it was brilliant. That was my highlight. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
What a guy, right? So he's an Irish international. He would want a place in that squad. And how many players would have responded by going, oh, Munster when we beat so-and-so?
Exactly.
He said the highlight of his whole year was being a fan of the Ireland team, and he would have been bitterly disappointed he wasn't in the squad, watching them win the Six Nations. I just thought, when I heard that, I thought, what a bloke.
You dozed off watching the Aviva final, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I dozed off watching the Bulgarians game, as any decent rugby fan should do. And then they said something, and it made me sit up bolt upright. And what they said is about Donica O'Callaghan. They said, he's had many highlights in his career, but playing for the Bulgarians must top them all. What? Are you serious? They must top it all? And the basis of this was, when he was a kid, his brothers, apparently his older brother played for the Barbarians too, and it's a combined services. When they were in the back garden, one of them would play as Ireland, the other one would play as the Barbarians. Even so, Stuart Barnes, I doubt very much that it is the highlight of that man's career.
God loves Stuart Barnes. He always comes out with some gem or another. Well, it woke you up and got you to watch a bit more of the game.
I thought I was having a dream.
So he's a funny guy. He's a prankster, he's got a bit of banter, and he's just a good bloke. Can we please just agree that Donica O'Callaghan has a place in Banter Squadron? Well done, Donica O'Callaghan.
Not sure he'd want to be in Banter Squadron. It's very English, isn't it?
It is so far, but we're... Well, no, it's got an Australian and Englishman.
But the theme is very, very
Dan
English,
Busters,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll find some other music for him.
Maybe. So Nick Cummins, Joe Marler, and now Donica O'Callaghan. If you have a suggestion of someone you think deserves to get in, at Rugby Podcast is where you can find us on Twitter. Just to remind you, if you're, I don't know, for some reason dozed off at the beginning of a podcast.
Not be hours, surely.
Have we got an update on Phil, actually? Because, I mean, it's me, just me, Tim, and him, JB, for the time being. Phil is, well, he's in the queue for the tuck shop. at Her Majesty's pleasure, I understand. He got himself in a spot of bother.
He did, unfortunately. Luckily, he's really muscly, because that'll help him out in prison. Or will it? Oh, I don't know.
Listen, have we come to the end? Oh, listen, there is a couple more things to talk about. Let's just briefly touch on the race for the final place in the Premiership. Have Bristol just completely ballsed it up?
Who knows? It'll be an interesting one on Wednesday.
19 points is a massive gap.
It is.
For London Welsh to be starting.
I literally have no idea who London Welsh have in their team. I know they have, is it Ross?
Gordon Ross.
Gordon Ross, the fly half, who kicked well, apparently.
Yeah,
and that's kind of where it ends.
London Welsh just played the conditions much better. Bristol were not streetwise at all. Didn't look like a team that. I mean, when you actually look at the 15 that Bristol had, good players, but you aren't going, oh yeah, that's the team of this billionaire owner that's going to get Bristol back to the top. I think they will get back to the top. Look at the signings they've made for next season: Dwayne Peel, Ryan Jones, although he was playing the other night, Perenisi. But I can't see Bristol.
Can't maybe
see Bristol
team
overturning
year.
That. Yeah, but that's I think that's a bitter blow to them if they miss out this year.
Yeah. Well, bitter playoffs, they mess everything up. There's nothing certain anymore.
Yeah, they've done it before.
Ask Saracens.
Yeah, they've been the favourites. Well, is Saracens' season a failure now? They were far and away the best team in England all year long.
No, they weren't. They were not the best team. They were the best squad.
Oh, right, okay. But is their season, now they've lost two finals, deemed a failure? Like, yeah. Bristol's will be a failure if they don't get promoted.
There are some teams, and when they fail, you just scratch your head and think, well, how can they improve? And a team that, you know, I'd put in that category would be Northampton. For the last 2 years, they've failed at, like, if not the final hurdle, the hurdle before that. And you look at this team, you think, who can they bring in? What can they do? Where can they strengthen? And the consensus for Northampton at the start of the season was they need new halfbacks, and they brought in a giant winger, and now they're champions. I think Saracens have just got to carry on plugging away, because they can't reinvent the team. Mm. They probably don't have the salary cap to reinvent the team. It has to be classed as a failure. Yeah, I think they want more money put in their starting 15 and less throughout the squad, and concentrate on just getting into the playoff finals rather than winning the league, which is, unfortunately, I think, what they ended up doing.
Mm. Well, let's talk about something that's no laughing matter, but it's become quite a serious point. And, you know, we're going to keep the podcast going, by the way, through the off-season, and we'll be getting into some of the topics surrounding rugby. Of course, there's the internationals to look forward to, the Southern Hemisphere tours for the Six Nations sides. But concussion has become a bit of a talking point. There was an amateur Irish rugby player who, at the age of 57, passed away. His family left his brain for scientific purposes. They did some tests on it and said he died of not scientific words, punch drunk syndrome, where he just got too many big whacks on the head.
Mm.
And it caused his death later on in life. Something that boxers undergo, and something which it's been a big concern about concussion. There's been a lot said about it this year. Concussion in rugby is a big issue. And Shontaine Happy, the former England international, retired recently. He was playing at Montpellier in France. And he basically retired saying, I've just had too many knocks on the head. It's not worth it. It was affecting my relationship with my kids. I was getting grouchy, and I was getting too much pressure from the coaches.
He said he's forgetting his PIN numbers and stuff like that, which is worrying. And that go on. Sorry, Tim.
No, not at all. No, it's exactly what he said. And he basically said that the coaches were putting too much pressure on him. They were giving him only a week out, whereas, you know, the recommendation is a month of doing nothing.
But he never said anything. That's the other thing as well. Mm.
He said he wanted to justify his. He said he wanted to justify his salary. He was being paid a lot of money. He got knocked out, and then he wanted to try and justify his money.
Well, that's all well and good, but you're not going to justify your money if you're knocked out on the floor of a ruck. You're just not, you know, you're not going to do anything there. And he did say, when he finally said, look, I've got a problem here, I think it was something to do with they were in a team meeting and he was pointed out as not rucking or being scared to go in. And he said, the reason I wasn't in, or sorry, the reason that he wasn't involved and he's on the floor is because he was knocked out. So then they sent him to Montpellier Hospital and they realised, Christ, he's got some serious issues there. I mean, I think it's a two-way street here. Players have got to be honest with the coaching and medical staff. Having said that, there is a really worrying precedent for this in American football.
Yeah, I thought you might have a perspective from American football, because American football is a game where... A game of concussions, where players use their head, and it's within the laws to just use your head as the point of a spear, using the weight of your body and the force of your body all towards the head.
Not anymore, it's not. Not as of this year or last year. So, for instance, running backs can't lower their helmets and that kind of thing. The situation with the NFL is they have independent doctors on the sidelines now, and you have to go through what they call the concussion protocol to see if you're fit to go out and play again. So once you get a concussion, the danger isn't that concussion, it's the subsequent concussions afterwards. And you see this a lot in fighters, in the UFC or boxing, which is someone might not ever get knocked out, and he gets knocked out once, and then he goes out over and over and over again. Apparently something to do with the pituitary gland or something like that. I don't know, I'm not a doctor. But that apparently is a danger. It's the reoccurrence. So once you have a brain trauma, if you like, because that's effectively what they are, you then need rest. So the NFL mandate that you've got to do concussion tests, and then an independent doctor has to sign you back to play again. So a few years ago, Aaron Rodgers, who's probably the best quarterback in the world, was out for, I think, 3 or 4 weeks. And he wasn't allowed back until the independent doctor said, yeah, you can come back. Because the NFL realised they've got a huge lawsuit on their case.
Well, they already paid out $700 million...
A settlement.
Yeah,
a settlement. So the only thing I don't like about this, OK, is there are dangers to playing rugby. There's dangers you're going to break your arm. There's dangers, you know, you're going to get a concussion, all the rest of it. But when you add up all the things which rugby gives to you as an individual, is it worth that risk? Now, I think that decision is solely for the individual to make, and I don't like it when individuals from outside the game start making noises, oh, it should be banned, or, we need to change the game, you know, to the point that it doesn't resemble what we actually enjoy doing.
But Shontayne Happy proactively went back with it the next week after suffering a concussion, and as a result he suffered another concussion.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Really easily. And it happened to me in junior rugby when I was going through my county trials at like under 15, under 16. I got a number of concussions one after the other. I got, I think, 3 or 4 in a row, and it was only my coach sort of saying, you're sitting the next game out, that stopped me from playing, because obviously at that age I just wanted to play.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been knocked out ever, so I don't really know what it's like. But apparently once you have the first one, you can become susceptible to the second one, and over and over and over again. There's a really good example of Florian Fritz being horribly mishandled because he was clearly concussed and they put him back out there. I mean, that should never happen. I think there's some basic steps that they can take, but I hope this doesn't snowball into some. I'm going to use one cliche, snowball into another cliche, into a bandwagon, and then we...
One thing I can... I have a vague memory of, not a very strong memory, but my mum tells me about, playing for like a Berks, Buckinghamshire and Dorset combined team against Devon and Cornwall or whatever, or Somerset, Devon and Cornwall. I was playing in a game and I got concussed and I was completely, had no short-term memory. And I was running over to the pitch, side of the pitch, every 2 minutes, going, "What number is on my back?"
Really?
What number's on my back? I was completely out of it, completely just.
Why do you want to know what number's on your back?
I don't know. Again, I think I was just going, "What position am I?" So that when I went to scrums and lineouts, I knew where to go.
See, I never had that problem because I was always 16.
Well, now JB, you can play anywhere. You just see what gap's missing in a yeah. team. Oh, I must be that position.
I show up to practice, and I look around and I think, where are we weak this week? Where am I most likely to get a game? And that's what I do.
Yeah. Well, I think that concussion one's going to rumble on and on. I mean, they brought in the 5-minute concussion assessment, but
Oh, if you're concussed, you stay off, and that's the end of it. You can't come back on.
Exactly what I was going to say. I think if there's... if you're concussed, that happens. I think it's a four-week minimum. But even if you have to go off for a concussion assessment, I think that's it.
Now, sorry, this is what I was going to say about... that's what I was going to say about the NFL and why I think it's worrying for rugby players, professional rugby players in particular. We are going down a situation where we've got a salary cap. So obviously there's only a certain amount of money you have to spend on players. In the NFL, if you miss a certain amount of games, that's a big black mark on your CV for the next team. So they'll say, we don't want to sign this player because last year he only had two games playing and he's injured the rest of it. He's obviously injury prone. And same with concussions. If you have a big concussion, they might not take you on because all they can see is a concussion case waiting to happen. You've used up some of their salary cap and you've used up a potential spot on that squad. Now, rugby's got to be careful that they don't make the incentives as such or the disincentives to say, coach, I've got a concussion. Because when that player moves on, the next team might not want that player because... You know, he's a concussion risk. What if you build your team around a fly half who gets knocked out? I think that's where they've got to tread very, very carefully.
I just want to finish on this one point from football because I think this story again.
Footy.
I think this footy with the World Cup just a couple of weeks away. I think this story gives us even more reason to feel proud, even though the eyes of the sporting world are going to be on the Football World Cup in Brazil, and even I will be very much taking an interest. I like this story which came out today as we record this podcast, and it says England manager Roy Hodgson has told his players to show pride for their country at the World Cup by singing the national anthem. Roy Hodgson has told his players they must sing the national anthem.
I don't like this. I don't like this one bit, you know, because footballers are very, they're very vain. A lot of them are idiots, granted. But I know where they're coming from here. I know where they're coming from because I would not want to be on TV being recorded singing. For no amount of money.
We're not talking X Factor here, Jay.
No, I just don't want anyone's here. I can understand it 100%. If you looked at, as long as you're crying, I'll give you this. You can sing or you can cry, right? You can't get away with doing neither, but you can get away with not singing. You can just cry.
But come on, there's something special when you see the way Jamie Heaslip belts out the Irish national anthem, or Phil Vickery, the way he used to, like you say, his lip would quiver as he sang, and he didn't care who was listening. He just sang it out as loud as he could.
Yeah, but I'm sure Lawrence Delaney sing, or did he just cry?
Oh, he did both.
I'm not sure.
No, Lawrence Delaney used to have a grimace. He sang as loud as he could. He didn't give a damn what anyone
thought
he sounded
like. There's a
lot of
Welsh boys that don't sing. I've noticed that. They just stand there. And I don't think there's anything wrong with taking in the atmosphere and just... Well, basically not singing. And I understand it 100%. In fact, I think it's a stupid thing to say by Roy Hodgson because it puts more pressure on them. They don't want to be thinking about, you know...
Is
my tone F minor?
Yeah, I know. It's pamper millionaires in that way as well, because there's loads of football teams that will be turning up at the World Cup getting a no-nookie ban whilst they're there. It's just like these are grown men. They're adults. And I just think, just let them do what they want to do and... They're there to do elite performance. It's like Clive. I like listening to Clive Woodward. He was at the time a breath of fresh air as a head coach because he basically said, I treat my players like men, and I trust them, and they're not going to let me down. So that, yeah, if they want families to come and stay with them, that's fine. If they want to,
there was a story about Gavin Henson, and God, I hope this is true. But the story was Gareth Jenkins. Remember him?
Yeah.
The ill-fated Welsh coach from not last World Cup, the World Cup before. When they went on a tour to Australia, his big thing was team building. So he got there and basically said, I might have told this story before. And they got there and he said, right, I don't want to see you for 48 hours.
Was Andy Powell in this squad?
I hope so. I don't want to see you for 48 hours, meaning go out, have a good time, bond, get pissed, come back. But you have to be back for 10 o'clock for your aqua aerobic session or your pool fitness session. Nobody saw Gavin Henson for 48 hours and he was late for the aqua aerobics thing. And one of the coaches said, get in the pool now. So he did in his suit and completed the whole session in his suit. Please God be true.
Oh, wow. Does that make you love him just that little bit more?
Oh, I absolutely.
Maybe the Fantastic Four that Murad Boujalal was on about. Like, was Andy Gujat Berger, Charlie Hodgson and Gavin Henson?
I feel when it comes to Gavin Henson, I feel like Cersei Lannister protecting Joffrey.
If anyone hasn't got to that stage of Game
he
of
dies,
Thrones.
He dies. He gets poisoned in his own wedding, he dies.
In fact, on that, I want to go home and watch the latest episode, season 4, episode 8. I want to go home and watch
that
one.
I know what happens
one.
In that one too.
Do you?
Yeah, do you want me to tell you?
No, I really don't. But thank you very much for listening. Hopefully Phil will be released from Her Majesty's Pleasure by the next podcast.
I hope so. I miss him.
I'm worried for him. Either that or maybe the rumours are true and he is part of the prison thing is actually just a little hoax and he is actually part of
it. It's not a hoax.
Part of a plan to rebuild his body using advanced robotic technology. We'll see. But at Rugby Podcast, you can get in touch with us. And yeah, give us, if there's anything you want us to do over the off season, it's going to be a little bit of a.
Yeah, we can preview the Rubbo Pro 12 for next season.
Yeah, well, we can go in depth on individual clubs. We can get into.
Well, we have got a feature coming up soon. And what we need for this is we need fans, big fans of certain teams. Because I kind of loosely align to Exeter, but I'm very, very fickle. I don't think you have a team, do you, Tim?
No. I've been criticised for this, going, can you say you like rugby and not have a team?
If you ever listen to football fans, that's when you'll understand why you don't have a team.
Well, the reason I don't have a team is because I've always followed the team my brother plays for. So, yeah,
at the moment... So you do have a team?
At the moment, I support London Irish. When he was at Sale Sharks, I supported Sale Sharks. And when he... If I have a soft spot for anyone, it's Bath, because I used to go and watch them when I was a kid.
Yeah, I have a soft spot for Bath because it's a very nice place, and that's it.
And I lived there for 7 years as well.
No, they are. Anyway. Phil, if he ever comes back, doesn't have a team. So what we need is basically we've got a fan-free agency type situation here, where we want you to pitch for Phil's fandom.
That's a great idea, because you kind of Exeter Chiefs.
Yeah.
You
big Exeter Chief. Never been to Exeter. But big Exeter Chief fan.
Exactly. But Phil is a free agent.
Yeah. So we need... it can be a team from anywhere. Preferably the Aviva. If you're a top salesman, if you're a salesman like, Belfort off Wolf of Wall Street, feel free to try and sell the Rabo Pro 12. Or maybe something else. I think lower league.
Yeah. Maybe you could... Like in Nigel Farage fashion, you could get him to go with a less fashionable and put his faith in something less fashionable. And
I don't know
more
what
you're
talking about, Tim.
In the margins.
How dare you? How dare you, you Eurocrat?
Right. Anyway, listen, at Rugby Podcast, you can get in touch with us there. And hopefully, like I say, we'll get Phil back for a future podcast. But nice one, JB.
Cheers. Oh, I was going to say Phil. Tim.
That's all right. In a bit.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.